Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Teresa.
And I'm Pat. We are part of North Coast Food Web, working to build healthy communities in our region through food and agriculture.
Today on Food Talk, we are talking about herbalism. And joining us is Brooke Dooling of Love Warrior Gardens. Welcome to the show, Brooke.
Thank you.
Brooke, it's great to have you with us this morning. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your connection to the North Coast.
Well, I was born in Oregon. I was born up by Mount Hood, Welch's, and I moved to Astoria when I was 8, so I'm a local here. And I went to school on the East Coast, but after college, I came back as soon as possible because I love it here. And I became an herbalist, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. I'd been working as a farmer originally, and I kept on getting, you know, so stressed out farming that I would find myself running into the woods just like to relax. And I was sitting in the forest around the farm I was working on, and I was just looking at all the plants and feeling so good. And I said, oh, I wonder what these plants are for. I mean, they must do something. And so I asked a friend of mine if she had any recommendations, because she was a naturopath, and she recommended a school called the Elderberry School of Botanical Medicine in Portland. And so I attended that school and realized that that was what I was born to do, is be an herbalist. And I'd never heard of it before.
Sorry, Brooke. What does that mean, to be an herbalist?
Well, it means, I guess, a lot of things, but the main thing is that I make medicine from wild plants. Or from plants. You can make it from garden plants as well. Mm-hmm. And that I know how to use plants in order to heal the body.
Do you primarily work with wild plants, or do you also use cultivated ones as well?
Because I don't have a garden anymore, I pretty much just use the wild plants. And it's so nice. They grow themselves, and I just have to go find them. It's really fun. And it's a great way to connect with the wild region we live in. I definitely use some non-native wild plants. Mm-hmm. So that's something that that maybe people would assume, that since I only use like Oregon and Washington plants, that they would all be native. But I use the European varieties that are growing here. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of great ones.
Yeah.
And then I'll use cultivated varieties when I get a chance. You know, if someone has lavender, I'm more than happy to come harvest it for you, turn it into medicine.
Sounds good.
What kind of medicine do you make from lavender?
Lavender medicine.
Which does what?
It's really calming. It's really relaxing. So you'll see lavender essential oil a lot, but I've made a tincture of it that you can just take on your tongue. You know, you can eat lavender. It's safe. But I made a tincture, and for all of you listeners who don't know, a tincture is an alcohol extract, or actually it could be any extract. You could do a vinegar tincture or a glycerin tincture. I primarily use high-proof alcohol, high-proof organic alcohol, because the alcohol is a great preservative, as well as it's the best extracting component for most. Most oils and resins don't dissolve into like water or vinegar, and the alcohol can dissolve them.
So what is it that you're extracting from the plants? And I mean, how do you make a tincture?
Yeah, so to make a tincture is actually super simple. You just need a mason jar and then some alcohol, and you harvest a plant. The hardest part is identifying the plant and knowing that it's the right plant. And then you harvest it and you chop it up and put it in a jar, and then pour alcohol over it. And after about 2 weeks, you can strain off the liquid, and the liquid is a tincture. Mm-hmm. And you press it as much as you can. I have a special tincture press that squeezes out the last liquid, which is oftentimes the best and the hardest to get out. But you can just do it by hand, and it's a pretty simple thing to do, and it can be simple or complicated depending on how much you want to get into it.
Do you have to agitate the jar at all or keep it out of sunlight?
It's supposed to be like in a cool. Darker place. And I think you're supposed to shake it, but I never do. And it's really one of those things that works even if you don't do it perfectly. Uh-huh. And what else?
And so what's the difference between a tincture and an essential oil?
The essential oils are the actual volatile oils that are in the plant, and someone will use like a distilling process to extract those oils. And to make essential oils is very difficult on a small scale because, mm-hmm. I mean, I've never done it, but you would need so much plant matter to get just a tiny mm-hmm. bit of essential oils. And that's why those are extremely expensive a lot mm-hmm. of time.
Yeah, it's hard for people to realize how much plant material goes into just a tiny jar of like lavender essential oil.
Yeah.
It'd be pounds of lavender.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure, yeah. And even the tinctures, I put a lot of plants in there to make mm-hmm. them the strong medicinal quality. So you can just like go gather and stuff them in a jar. And I have like certain ratios that I use so that my tinctures are the same all the time and maximum potency. So you can really taste the plant in them. But yeah, the lavender one, you just put it on your tongue and it's just nice and relaxing and like calming. And I think it's good for your stomach too.
So what kind of plants do you work with?
Well, my name, Love Warrior Gardens, comes from my two favorite plants, yarrow and hawthorn. Though if you ever hear me talk about plants, I'll say every plant is my favorite.
It's like children.
Yeah, it's just whichever one I'm talking about. But yarrow is supposedly a warrior plant. And then when I was working with yarrow, I was like, yarrow is my plant. I love yarrow. Am I? Does that mean I'm a warrior? And I decided I was, and that if I was a warrior, I would be a love warrior. And then a few weeks later, we started working with hawthorn, which just totally opens your heart. And it's physically very healing for the heart as well. But when you hear me talk about plants, you'll hear me talking about a lot of the energetic spiritual qualities, because mm-hmm. I work with the plant spirits and not just the physical medicine. For me, the physical medicine is like a nice aside. And mm-hmm. I really get excited about the personalities of plants and really the just the special little things that you can tell. For me, I can tell what plant is good for someone more by just the way they are acting than like the symptoms they're describing. And I'll use the symptoms and the physical medicine as kind of a like, oh yeah, that would definitely be good for you. But I can kind of tell by just using my intuition about, as you get to know the plants out there, you can see what their personalities are and see, and then if you know people, you know what their personalities are and you can kind of connect the two.
So Brooke, as you were talking about discussing with a person, so you must do more than make tinctures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I make the medicine and then I also work with people to find the right medicines. So I can do like herbal consultations. And then I also have a different healing modality that has kind of come to me, which is that I sing to the plants. I came upon songs while I was working in the forest with the plants and making this medicine. I started writing songs and making songs for the plants. And I didn't realize at first, because I lived in a cabin by myself for a couple years, and I didn't realize that these songs were really powerful and until I sang them in front of other people, and they were like, whoa, Brooke, like, whoa, that was crazy. I was like, oh, yeah, like, I use those to heal myself. Like, if I have a stomach ache and I don't have any mugwort, I'll just sing the mugwort song, and then my stomach ache goes away, you know? And then I was like, oh, that's kind of special. And so I started doing healing sessions for individuals. So they're kind of like shamanic style. I don't know. I've never been to a shaman, but I imagine it's what a shaman does, which is working with energies and spirits and song. And so it's...
So are these songs that you've written, are they songs with words or is it more sound?
Yeah, they have words and they're very simple words, usually repeated in like tones, yeah. Other sounds that mm-hmm. like go for a long time.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah. That sounds great. So how do people get a hold of Love Warrior Gardens if they're interested in a consultation or tinctures? Or
yeah, well, the great news is that I just got a website a few months ago, so that makes it infinitely easier. LoveWarriorGardens.com is how you can reach me, and I also have a email and contact on there. And
but you've also been showing up at some farmers markets locally too. Maybe talk about that. So people want to meet you in person and mm-hmm. check out what you make.
Yeah. So I'm at the Thursday market, the River People's Farmers Markets, most Thursdays.
In Astoria,
across from the co-op. There's a few times I won't be there, like for instance this Thursday, and you can see my schedule on my website. And then I'm also doing the Manzanita Farmers Market the first week in September and the first week in August, and I just did this last one.
Cool.
And your website is?
LoveWarriorGardens.com.
Great, thanks.
So I'm curious about you, when you go out and go out into the woods, I'm assuming, or just mm-hmm. out into the nature to find different wild plants, are there certain places that you connect with that you go to find certain plants? Do you, I mean, in harvesting and wild, it's wildcrafting mm-hmm. is what you're talking about. Do you have to seek permission to do that? I mean, how do you go? I mean, I'm sorry, I'm just thinking about it as like just going out to the woods and harvesting. And I know there's a respect with harvesting plants too, about, and maybe talk a little bit about, you know, how much you take, what you leave, you know, relating to the plants in that way.
Yeah, well, the permission one is a tricky one mm-hmm. because I don't always know who owns the land that I'm harvesting on. And I think that I always look for signs mm-hmm. and I'm always looking for signs, and I do harvest on friends' property, which is the easiest, is if it's a private property owned by someone I know and they give me permission. That's the easiest. And then there's like state parks, which have different rules and all of that stuff that you have to look into individually. My harvest sites, right now, I don't harvest anywhere that I'm worried about.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm not sure, then I just don't harvest. But I've got some cool spots like up in the mountains and then a lot along the coast here, too. Mm-hmm. And then as far as harvesting and respect, the main thing I look for is, the impact of harvesting out the plant. And so it really depends on each plant is different, because some plants I'm just harvesting the tops, and some, and like for nettles, for instance, where I harvest, I'll actually cut down more than I'm harvesting so that they'll keep growing back and I can harvest longer and it extends my harvest season, and they thrive by being cut back, you know, kind of like basil or something, that the more you cut it back, the longer it lasts and it just bushes out. And then there's other plants that you have to be really careful with, like rare or endangered plants. I just don't harvest, even though they're good for medicine, a lot of them. And ones that I don't find, I always check to see how much there is. And I also know like which ones are slow growing, because there are some plants that seem really plentiful, but they're really slow growing. And so you can't harvest a lot of them. So like Osha is one that's one of my favorite plants. It doesn't grow right around here. It grows like in the mountains. The traditional Osha grows like, I think, in the more inland and south than here, but we have a species in Oregon called like Eusticum grayi, which I like to harvest down in southern Oregon. But it's a slow growing root that's in the carrot family, and it's great for the lungs and throat, and it's a bear medicine. The bears dig it up and actually
the bears know something.
The bears actually use it, and it also brings that kind of bear wild quality. It's one that you can't cultivate. It's very cool. But
that's fascinating to me too, that there are plants that you cannot cultivate, that they don't respond to being grown in a garden.
I think part of it is just a lot of these plants grow only in the mountains. So like my other favorite wild plant that won't grow in cultivation is another bear plant, is huckleberries. And so you can't grow those in your garden. But I think the Native Americans actually do have like plots up in the mountains where the huckleberries grow that are tended and taken care of. And I just realized that recently, and I was like, oh, if you grow it where it grows.
Today we are talking with Brooke Dooling. She's an herbalist with Love Warrior Gardens. And we were just talking about huckleberries. And I know we wanted to also talk, because we love to talk about food here. And I know that a lot of plants, it's interesting, you have they have medicinal qualities, but they're also just great food as well. And you mentioned huckleberries as being one of your favorites. So maybe talk about how you use huckleberries, both as food and as medicine.
Well, I grew up eating huckleberries. My mom actually was just reading her journal and figured out that I picked my first huckleberry when I was 1 year old.
Wow.
Because we grew up picking them. And my birthday is in August, which is when the huckleberries are ripe. So I've always loved huckleberries. And my favorite way to eat huckleberries is huckleberry pie. It is my favorite food of all foods. So just like a traditional pie crust. I can't give you my recipe because it's my grandmother's. My mom would kill me. But
it's
a pie crust
we respect
with
the secret
then
recipes.
Huckleberries and like a little bit of flour to thicken it up.
Do you add sugar or?
Yeah. Sugar. Yeah. And like a cup of sugar.
Huckleberries can be a little tart.
Yeah. I mean, they're really good on their own, but for pie, you just. Mm-hmm.
And
sugar
it's
is
a
like,
small berry, isn't it? It's not a
it
huge.
It is. It's like a very small blueberry. And there's a lot of different kinds of huckleberries. So there's here on the coast, we have red huckleberries, which are delicious. I've only had them for snacks.
They're tart, too.
Yeah, they're tart.
Yeah.
And then we also have an evergreen huckleberry here on the coast, which is like a black huckleberry, but it has evergreen leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then the huckleberries that I'm talking about, because I'm a huckleberry snob, are the mountain huckleberries. They're a black mountain huckleberry. I don't know what their technical name is. And there's like several varieties that grow up in the mountains. That just interbreed, but they're so delicious, and each one, I swear, tastes different. Like, there's some smoky ones, and some, oh, that one was really sweet. Oh, this one's, you know, when you're picking huckleberries, you have to taste them all, and they're
all... Does it depend on the bush or the location?
You know, sometimes you'll have different tasting ones on the same bush. It's just really an exciting process.
Is it the mountain ones, Brooke, that are really that deep, amazing purple color?
Yeah. The evergreen ones here are really dark black as well. But those purpley ones up in the mountains, they're like juicy. They have a thin skin like a blueberry. And they look a lot like a tiny blueberry. But the taste just blows you away.
Those are the ones I want for huckleberry soup.
Ooh.
They sound perfect.
What's a soup?
Amazing. Amazing. It's oftentimes used as a palate cleanser, but I think it makes a fantastic dessert. So the huckleberries are cooked with some sugar and some sparkling wine. Wine, sugar, huckleberries, you know?
So you just cook those together and then...
And you cook it and blend it, strain it, and you have this amazing soup that you serve cold. And if you put a scoop of orange sorbet in
good
that...
Good Lord.
It's... That's gorgeous. Really so picture that in a martini glass or something like that. It's absolutely beautiful. And is a yummy, yummy dessert on
but
a hot
a
day.
Soup?
It's called soup. Yes.
Yeah.
It's called
interesting.
Soup.
Interesting. Wow.
And there are a lot of fruit soups out there that people eat as a soup course.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, like a white gazpacho is a great, but the huckleberry.
That sounds so good.
Think about that. Yeah.
So huckleberries, I mean, they're kind of, I'm not, I want to say they're rare, but they're hard to find. You have to
they're
kind of
precious.
know what you're looking for, right? And know where to go. And I think people guard their huckleberry patches pretty jealously.
It's actually, you know, that it seems like it would be that way because wild foods, you know, a lot of wild foods are that way. But if you get up to the mountains, there's signs there that say berry patch this way, you know, huckleberry fields this way.
Oh, wow.
Berry fields, I think, is what the signs say. But it's, and then where I go, it's no secret. You just have to drive to it.
Mm-hmm.
And watch for the signs.
And watch for the signs. And one side of the road is for Native Americans and the other side anyone can pick on.
Oh, that's interesting that they separate those. Yeah.
Well, it was like a handshake agreement back in, I don't know when, whenever.
Mm-hmm.
Their huckleberry fields were made ours as well.
Nice.
So huckleberry pie sounds absolutely wonderful. But I know too, Brooke, that you have been experimenting a little bit with vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking vinegars and shrubs and infused vinegars are all really popular. Talk a little bit about the vinegar that you did.
Yeah, well, I've done a couple different vinegars, actually. Just recently, I did a spruce tip vinegar. I harvested the fresh green tips of spruce trees and mm-hmm. infused it in a white wine vinegar. It didn't turn out quite as sprucey as I would have hoped. I would have packed it with more spruce next time. But the idea was that the green tips of the evergreen trees around here are very good sources of electrolytes. And so I've made a tincture with the shore pine, which is really nice, but that's in an alcohol. And so I was thinking, oh, how could I take advantage of the electrolytes outside of the, like, you know, 1 month that we have these of the year? And I mm-hmm. thought a vinegar would be really nice because that's also like refreshing and electrolyte filled. So I tried the spruce tip one. And then I've also done another vinegar that was a mineral tonic vinegar that I packed with wakame, so seaweed mm-hmm. that I harvest off the coast, and nettles and horsetail and thimbleberry leaf, which is a good stand-in for red raspberry leaf, mm-hmm. And maybe a couple others that I can't think of right now. I think comfrey is another one that's really mineral rich, but that mm-hmm. was just a good... sometimes I like to use the vinegar instead of the alcohol because it's a food and it's good for you. And
mm-hmm. how do you take it? Do you just put drops on your tongue or do you dilute it in water?
It depends. Like for the refreshing one, it was just to put in water or mm-hmm. sparkling water, and sometimes add honey because if you don't like vinegar, it can be intense.
Yeah. We were talking about that a little bit earlier about just that making sort of these electrolyte drinks. Especially when it's hot out, if you're working outside or you're doing any sports or something like that, kind of a non-Gatorade-y type of drink, but that replenishes your electrolytes, and the vinegars
so
are really
good for you.
And if then you also have infused it with herbs and it's got some medicinal qualities to it as well, it sounds fantastic. I need gallons of that on the
yeah.
farm.
So, Brooke, I'm curious about both your tinctures and your vinegars. I think about extracts as having guidelines and recipes. Do you have recipes that you find for your tinctures, or are these things that you have created based on your knowledge of the herbs?
Well, I have different, most of my tincture recipes come from my teacher, Scott Kluse. He worked at the Alderbury School of Botanical Medicine, and then also I did a school with him called the School of Forest Medicine, and he's a real tincture guru. He's like investigated and done all these different trials, and then he was so kind to hand us a spreadsheet of all the like tincture ratios
nice.
That he came up with that were best for each plant. So and then when I'm doing a new plant that he hasn't done, I'll make up a recipe myself. And so the recipe portion is kind of, I always do the same amount of herb. It's a 1-2 herb to liquid ratio. Like grams to milliliters. I know that ratio stays consistent because that's just like the most amount of herb that you can put in a jar and still be extracting anything from, so that the liquid is completely saturated with the medicine. That's kind of why I do the ratios, because if you were to make a tincture without weighing the herb, you would never guess this much herb could fit in a jar. You know, like I'll take a huge bowl, like, or two huge bowls, depending. Like flowers are one thing that's super light, and so you can pick like a whole like two shopping bags full of flowers and then put them into a quart-sized mason jar, and
wow,
you know, just so there's that aspect. And then the other aspect is just the water to alcohol ratio. So some things have water extracted components and some things really need the super high proof alcohol. So for instance, resins or oils only dissolve in the really high proof alcohol. So if I'm harvesting something for the first time and it's really sticky or pretty much sticky or like really smelly, because oils are smelly, then I'll use the 100% alcohol, or, you mm-hmm. know, I think it's 95% mm-hmm. alcohol is what I get. And then if it's a little bit more tender and leafy and soft or flowery without the oils, then I'll add some water back in, like 75% water, mm-hmm. or no, 25% water. You have to have at least 40% alcohol. Yeah.
So there is a requirement on your tinctures in terms of percent of alcohol?
Not a requirement by anyone else, but just if it's if it's under 25% alcohol, I think it won't.
It won't extract.
No, yeah. It won't be shelf stable. So you need to have enough alcohol in there to preserve it so it doesn't go bad.
How long do tinctures last for?
Tinctures last like 10 years or more. Wow. But for me, some of them start kind of extracting out or like getting chunky, I guess, mm-hmm. and you have to shake them after like 2 years. Okay. So, but they last a really long time.
That's cool.
Yeah. Huh. It's a great thing. Wow. It's part of why I chose to do that instead of farming, because like lettuce lasts like, you know,
a
6 hours or something. And the tinctures, like, especially for being, you know, young and not having a farm, it's just a really easy thing to put on a shelf and pick up again.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting learning more about tinctures. I lived in a shared house with a group of women before I moved to Astoria, and one of the women was an herbalist, and she had a drawer full of all these tinctures. And anytime somebody would be, oh, I don't feel good, she'd grab something and she'd say, stick out your tongue, and she'd put drops of something, and we're all so, okay, whatever. So we'd get this remedy that she used to use to take care of us. So it's great to learn a little bit more about the science, if you will, the medicine behind the tinctures.
Yeah. It seems like an ongoing process, too. You must just continually be learning
new things. And I'm just starting to kind of get into developing some of my own recipes. So I do like a honey syrup, too, which is a really nice, that's one thing I do with the huckleberries. I make a huckleberry honey syrup that has honey and cider vinegar and but mostly honey and huckleberries and a little bit of OSHA, and I call it bear medicine.
Oh, nice.
But the honey syrups are a nice, honey's another great preservative that's also mm-hmm. a food, kind of like mm-hmm. vinegar. Yeah. And so there's also elderberry honey syrups that are really good.
So remind our listeners, Brooke, how they can get in touch with you and where they can find your tinctures.
You can get in touch with me by contacting me on my website, lovewarriorgardens.com, and you can find our event schedule on that website as well. And you can find me most Thursdays at the River People Farmers Market and occasionally at the Manzanita Farmers Market.
Great.
Thanks. I know it's been so fascinating to hear about what you're doing and learn more about the tinctures. It's great. I look forward to seeing what you come up with next.
Yeah, what is next?
Just more of this and
we'll see.
More workshops and classes. And
stay tuned.
Yeah, more workshops and classes, hopefully.
Very cool, very cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah,
it was great
you.
To have
it's
you here
really
with us.
It's been really fun to learn more about this.
So what do we have coming up? Farmers markets?
I think farmers markets. I think
farmers
it's just
markets,
farmers markets all up and down the coast. I think we've decided that pretty much except for Mondays, you can hit a farmers market every day of the week right now on the North Coast, which is very exciting. And I encourage everybody to go out and go shopping for local food because it's in abundance right now.
And it is beautiful.
And it tastes great. So there's good medicine for you, too.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brooke. And thanks to our engineer, Marianne Myers. And thanks for joining us today's Food Talk. Fresh conversations about local food on the North Coast. Stickin'.